إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا. من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. Indeed, the praise belongs to Allah. We praise Him, seek His assistance and forgiveness, and we seek refuge in Allah from the evil of ourselves and the evil consequences of our deeds. Whoever Allah guides, there is no one that can lead him astray, and whoever Allah leads astray, there is no one that can guide him. I bear witness that nothing deserves to be worshipped except Allah alone, and that He has no partners or associates. And I bear witness that Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is His servant and His messenger. Okay, today this is our sixth session, reading from Lessons in Arabic Language, Book 1, by Dr. Fa' Abdul Rahim, Islamic University of Medina, Arabic Language Institute. Today we are going to take a new lesson, that is lesson number 4, Dars al-Rabi'. And before we begin with the lesson for today, let me remind us of the importance of review, al-muraja'ah. Normally at the beginning of the proposed or suggested schedule for homework assignments, normally the first day or two is going to be, the suggestion is that you review the previous lessons. So, for this week, inshallah, hopefully everybody reviewed lesson 1, 2, and 3. Perhaps you could have reviewed lesson 1 and 2 on the same day, since lesson 2 is very, very short. And on the second day, perhaps lesson 3. Reviewing the lesson, according to my view of the matter, it is preferable or better that you review the English key for the grammatical points, the vocabulary that follows it, which has to be memorized, and then the Arabic text at the beginning of the Arabic section of the book, and that is so that you can see the grammatical rules and the vocabulary that are new for that lesson in context. This is my suggestion. Okay, so the first couple of days should have been for reviewing the previous lessons, 1, 2, and 3, and then on Wednesday we suggested that you begin with a new lesson that we're going to take today, that is lesson number 4, the English key and the vocabulary on pages 7, 8, and 9. Which we're going to cover immediately when we begin this lesson. And then the next day, on Thursday, it was suggested that you read the Arabic text on page 21 carefully, making sure that you understand the grammatical rules, the new vocabulary words, and that you comprehend what you're reading, followed by the comprehension exercise number 1, which immediately follows it on page 21 and 22. Then on Jummah we suggested that you read and write the remaining exercises. The remaining exercises which are on page 22 and 23. So that would have been the second exercise, which is numbered 2, and then the exercise that follows, which on the bottom of page 22, which has no number, and continued on page 23, and then the final exercise, which also has no number, on the bottom of page 23. So that was our suggestion for this week. I hope that you have been following this suggestion, or at least if you have a schedule of your own that suits you, then no problem, that's also just fine. Okay, so again, today, this is our sixth session, and today we're going to be taking a new lesson, that is lesson number 4. Okay, so let's look at the English key for lesson number 4. Which is on page 7 and 8, followed by the vocabulary on page 9. This lesson contains, according to my count, 6 points. Okay, in the book, they are numbered as 1 and 2, the first one dealing with prepositions, and the second point dealing with pronouns. But I have divided each of them into 2 parts, because they deal with 2 different matters. So each one of those points 1 and point 2 has 2 subdivisions. And then There are also two notes at the end of the English key, which are numbered note 1 and note 2. So if we counted it like that, then we have 6 points. So I hope that you focus on these 6 points related to the two topics of حروف الجر, that is prepositions, and الضمائر, يعني the دمية, pronouns. Okay, this is the first lesson that we're taking prepositions and pronouns. So we're going to see a couple of new things here. Please pay careful attention as we read through the English key, which, inshallah, hopefully everybody has already previewed for homework during the week. At the top of page 7, it says lesson number 4. In this lesson, we learn the use of prepositions. In this lesson, we learn the use of prepositions. Prepositions are called حروف الجر, or a singular حرف جر. So, Arabic nouns, yani an introduction to the use of prepositions. Number 1, it says Arabic nouns have endings to show their functions in the sentence. They have endings, meaning the word nouns, whether they are adjectives or proper nouns or common nouns, all of this comes under the title of ism in Arabic language. Remember, we said that the Arabic language is divided into 3 parts of speech: the ism, the fi'l, and the harf. So anything that is not a verb, a fi'l, and is not a harf, a particle, then everything else comes under nouns. Okay, so common nouns, proper nouns, pronouns, demonstrative pronouns, personal pronouns, all of that comes under ism. So the bottom line here, what we want to say, Arabic nouns have endings to show their functions in the sentence. What do we mean? We mean that a noun will end with a vowel, dhamma, kasra, or fatha. And that vowel gives us some indication of the function of that word in the sentence. The normal ending of a noun is u, dhamma, as in al-baytu jadidun, the house is new. Okay, if we look at these two nouns, the first noun, the mubtada, the subject, we see that it ends with a dhamma, al-baytu. And if we look at the second word in this sentence, the khabar, the predicate, jadidun, we see that it also ends with dhamma, double dhamma. Okay? So, we're not concerned, is it single dhamma or dhammu dhamma here in reference to this topic of the ending, the ending of the word, its vowel that indicates its function. It doesn't matter if it's a single dhamma or double dhamma. What we are concerned with, is it a dhamma or is it a kasra or is it a fatha? So again, Arabic nouns have endings to show their functions, meaning they end with a dhamma, a kasra, or a fatha. The normal ending, yani the original ending of a noun is dhamma, meaning before it's put into a sentence, nouns are naturally, originally, normally going to end with dhamma. Until you put it into a sentence, and as we'll see in this lesson, if it's following a preposition, meaning it's the object of a preposition, it's going to change from dhamma to kasra. And we'll see later on, for example, that if it was the object of a verb, hamafulun bi, then it will change to fatha, and so on. So, again, the normal ending of a noun is going to be dhamma. We're going to always read a noun with a dhamma, single dhamma, or double dhamma, dhammatan, tanween. But originally, we're going to read it with dhamma. A noun with the normal ending is said to be in the nominative case. In Arabic, it is called marfu'un. Okay, this is an expression, this is a term that we need to learn. Yani, in English they call it the nominative case. In Arabic we call it marfu'un. Marfu'un. Okay? When a noun has this, its normal ending, yani the dhamma ending, then it is said to be in the nominative case. In Arabic it's called marfu'un. After a preposition, this ending changes to I or kasra. For example, al-baytu originally ends with dhamma. But if we have it following a preposition, as in fil-bayti, now the dhamma in al-baytu changed to kasra. Al-bayti, fil-bayti, yani in the house. Likewise, yani that's a single vowel at the end of the word. Likewise, if the word had a double vowel, originally dhamma, baytun, a house, and then it's following a preposition as in fi baytin, in a house, then we see that the double dhamma becomes double kasra. Okay, so changing from dhamma to kasra, if it is originally a single dhamma, it becomes a single kasra. If it's originally a double dhamma, it becomes a double kasra. Another example, al-maktabu, yani the table, al-maktabu. If it's following a preposition such as ala, ala al-maktabi. Okay, so al-maktabu, ending with a single dhamma, when it's following a preposition, it changes to a single kasra, ala al-maktabi. A noun preceded by a preposition is said to be in genitive case. In Arabic, it's called majrurun. Okay, so now we have two cases. The nominative case, that's the original case of a noun. It's the primary sign of a noun when it's in the nominative case is dhamma. Now we have a second case, that is the genitive case. Okay, and the primary sign of a noun when it's in the genitive case is kasra. Okay, so we have two cases here, and we have two vowel endings to indicate that case. Nominative case in Arabic, marfu'un. Genitive case in Arabic, majrurun. Okay, so this is the first point of lesson number 4. That is how Arabic nouns have endings, a vowel ending, dhamma, kasra, or fatha. And this vowel ending shows their function in the sentence. Shows, is it the subject of the sentence? Is it the predicate? Is it the object of a preposition, as we'll see in this lesson, or is it the object of a verb, and so on? Okay, its function in the sentence, its position in the sentence, will be indicated by its vowel ending. This is called al-i'rab, yani looking at the changing endings of a noun, changing from dhamma to kasra to fatha, and so on. So this is the first point, that nouns in Arabic have an ending which indicate their function. Originally, the ending is always going to be dhamma, single dhamma or double dhamma, and then when it's put into a sentence and something acts upon it, then it may change to kasra or fatha. In this lesson, we'll see it changing to kasra when it is the object of a preposition. When it changes to kasra, its case changes from nominative to genitive. In Arabic, from marfu'un to majrurun. This is the first point. If you understood this, then we can move on to the second major point of this lesson. Point number 2 on the bottom half of page 7 says, in this lesson we also learn two pronouns, huwa, which means he or it, and hiya, which means she or it. In Arabic, all nouns are either masculine or feminine. All nouns are either, there's no neutral, neuter. Yani it's either masculine or feminine. Humans, animals, inanimate things are all in Arabic classified into either being masculine, mudhakkar, or feminine, mu'annath. A masculine noun is referred to by the pronoun huwa, whether it denotes a human being, an animal, or a thing. For example, أين الولد? Where's the boy? Okay, this is a human, right? The pronoun that's referring back to الولد is the pronoun هُوَ. هُوَ فِي الْمَسْجِدِ. Okay, take a careful look at this. Yani, the point that we're making here is that the pronouns هُوَ and هِيَ are used to refer to masculine or feminine nouns. That noun that's masculine, it could be a human being, or it could be an animal, or it could be an inanimate thing. And likewise, the pronoun here, which refers to feminine nouns, could refer to a human being, a female, or an animal, or an inanimate thing. Every noun in Arabic has to come under one of these classifications. If we refer back to it with a pronoun, the pronoun is going to be huwa. If that word, if that noun comes under the classification of masculine, mudhakkar, then the pronoun that we're going to use to refer to it is going to be huwa. If we look at that noun and we know that the noun represents a female, human being, or animal, or an inanimate thing that's classified as feminine, then the pronoun that we're going to refer back to it with is going to be here. Okay, so they gave us the example here of the pronoun huwa being used to refer to a human being. Aina al-waladu huwa fil masjidi. Where's the boy? He. The boy, he, is in the masjid. Remember, pronouns are words that take the place of nouns. Pronouns take the place of nouns. So we had a noun here, al-waladu, a common noun, and then we have a pronoun that's being used to refer back to al-waladu. Ain al-waladu? We could have used walad again and said, al-waladu fil masjidi. Or we can exchange that noun and use a pronoun to refer back to it. In this case, since al-waladu is masculine, then we refer back to it with huwa. Okay, if you turn to page 8, we see that they give us another example. This time, the pronoun huwa, which is used to refer to masculine things, is being used not to refer to a human, but rather to an inanimate thing. The second example on the top of page 8, aina al-kitabu. Aina al-kitabu, where is the book? Huwa ala al-maktabi. It is on the table. Okay, here huwa is referring to a thing, so we don't say he is on the table. Where's the book? He is on the table. We say it is on the table. Because remember, huwa means he or it. If it's referring to a human being, we say he. If it's referring to an inanimate thing, we say it. Likewise, a feminine noun is referred to by the pronoun here, whether it denotes a human being, an animal, or a thing. For example, aina aminatu. Where is Amina? Here, fil bayti. She is in the house. Okay? Aina aminatu. Where's Amina? Amina fil bayt. But instead of repeating the proper noun Amina, we're going to replace it with a pronoun that refers back to, since Amina is feminine, then we have to use the pronoun that's used for feminine things. That pronoun is used for whatever is classified as feminine, whether it's a human, an animal, or an inanimate thing. Aina aminatu? Hiya fil bayti. Where's Amina? She is in the house. Now we're going to see how hiya also can be used to refer to an inanimate thing, not a human. Aina as-sa'atu? Aina as-sa'atu? Where is the watch? Hiya ala sariri. Hiya ala sariri. It is on the bed. Okay, hiya is being used to refer to an inanimate thing, as-sa'atu. Instead of repeating as-sa'a, yani we just use the pronoun to refer to it. As-sa'atu is a feminine noun, and that is generally indicated by its ending with ta marbuta, the round ta or the closed ta. So since we know that as-sa'atu is feminine, then if we want to use a pronoun to refer to it, we have to use the feminine pronoun, that is here. Here, ala sariri. It is on the bed. Okay, this is the first part of the second point, that is pronouns. We have two pronouns that we have so far. The third person masculine singular, huwa, meaning he or it, and the third person feminine singular, hiya, meaning she or it. Subpoint from under this point number two, it says most feminine nouns end with a round ta, yani ta marbuta, but there are some which do not have any ending, yani it do not have the ta marbuta ending. Yet there are some feminine nouns that are not, their femininity is not indicated by ta marbuta. So most feminine nouns end with ta marbuta, but there are plenty of exceptions of words that are feminine that don't end with ta marbuta. We'll learn the details of this later on. Okay, so these are the first four points. Yani the first two is related to prepositions, and the second two points are related to pronouns. The pronouns huwa and hiya, yani referring to things which are masculine and feminine. The last two points are the notes. At the bottom half of page 8, it says note. Number 1, we have learned that the tanween, yani the double vowel at the end of a word, is the indefinite article. For example, baytun, yani the double dhamma at the end of the word bayt indicates that it is indefinite. So it means baytun, a house. This is a general rule that tanween is the indefinite article as opposed to alif lam, which is the definite article. Al baytu means the house. Baytun means a house. This rule does not apply to proper nouns. Masculine proper nouns end with tanween, but it doesn't mean that those masculine proper nouns are indefinite. So Hamidun, yani this is a proper noun, the name of a person, Hamidun is, in translation, we just translate it as Hamid, not a Hamid. Okay? So, for example, yani if somebody said Hamidun Talibun, we don't translate Hamidun as a Hamid is a student. No, we just say Hamid. Okay, so the tanween, although it is generally understood to indicate indefiniteness of a noun, there are exceptions where we're not going to translate it as yani a something. Same thing with adjectives. We're not going to say a broken, maksurun. We don't say, we mentioned that previously, we don't say yani al-maktabu maksurun, the table or the desk is a broken. We just say it's broken. So we have to keep in mind that this is a general rule, that tanween yani generally is translated as a, yani as the indefinite article, but it is not always translated as a. There are some exceptions, and it does not always indicate that something is indefinite, because proper nouns, the names of people and cities and countries, proper nouns are all definite. Masculine proper nouns take tanween generally, but that tanween does not indicate it's indefinite, because all proper nouns are definite. Okay, so this is one note. The second note is that feminine proper nouns have no tanween. For example, Aminatu, Zainabu, Fatimatu. These are feminine proper nouns. Feminine proper nouns, unlike masculine proper nouns, feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. Okay, so this is also a rule that we need to pay attention to. Masculine proper nouns, the names of men, take tanween. Feminine proper nouns, the names of women, females, do not take tanween. And this rule that feminine proper nouns have no tanween is applicable to feminine proper nouns that have ta marbuta and feminine proper nouns that do not have ta marbuta. Remember we said that most feminine nouns end with ta marbuta, but there are yani some which do not have this ta marbuta ending. So, for example, Fatimatu has ta marbuta, Aminatu has ta marbuta, and so on. But we see Zainabu, it's a feminine proper noun, but it doesn't have ta marbuta. All feminine proper nouns are mamnu min as-sarf. Forget about the term mamnu min as-sarf, but what is important, it means that it's from a class of words, a group of words that does not take tanween. Feminine proper nouns do not take tanween, as opposed to masculine proper nouns, which do take tanween. In any case, with the tanween or without the tanween, proper nouns, masculine and feminine proper nouns, are all definite. What we are concerned about here, though, is to remember that masculine proper nouns, though they have tanween, it doesn't mean that they're indefinite. And feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. Okay, so this is the end of what we wanted to cover in the English key on page 7 and 8. Again, just to quickly go over the points that we have looked at in the English key here that hopefully you previewed and you looked at during the week and studied carefully, is number one, Arabic proper nouns have endings which indicate their function, yani the vowel on the end that indicates its case ending. Is it in the nominative case or the genitive case, for example? And that sign, the primary sign, if it's in the nominative case, is Dhamma. If it's in the genitive case, it's Kasra. And these two cases in Arabic are called nominative, marfu'un, genitive, majrurun. The second thing, the point here is that that what we saw in this lesson is that nouns, when they are following a preposition, they change from being in the nominative case, yani with Dhamma, to the genitive case with Kasra. After this, we talked about pronouns, and we said we're going to take two pronouns in this first part of the lesson, huwa and hiya. And we said that all nouns in Arabic are going to be classified as masculine or feminine, and therefore the pronoun that refers back to them is going to be in consideration of which group they belong to, masculine nouns or feminine nouns. If they're masculine nouns, we're going to use huwa, which means he or it, if it's yani it, if it's referring to non-human, and hiya, which means she or it, yani it, if it's referring to non-human. And also, yani, we also want to pay careful attention to the final notes that we mentioned, and that is that most feminine nouns end with ta marbuta, but there are some which do not, and also that masculine proper nouns end with tanween, but that does not mean that they are indefinite. Okay, let's look at the vocabulary that follows on page 9. On the right side, we see a preposition, ala, which means on or upon or above, ala. And keep in mind that a preposition, the noun that follows it, the object of that preposition, is gonna change from being marfu'un with dhamma to majrurun with kasra. This is very important. The next word that came is as-sama'u, which means the sky or that which is above. The next word, al-faslu, al-faslu with sa'd, al-faslu, which means the classroom. The next word, al-mirhadu. In my book, it looks like the letter following meme and ra, it looks like it has a dot, but it's not kha, it's ha, as in Hamid, and as in Muhammad, and so on. Okay? So the final word in the right-hand column is al-mirhadu, yani with ha and dad. This means the toilet. Al-mirhad means the toilet. Going to the left side, from the top we see the word ayna. Ayna, this is an ism istifham. Remember, we had in lesson 1 several words that are used to ask questions. We had hamzatul istifham, a, ahadha baytun, is this a house? And we also had ma hadha, when you're asking about inanimate things, what is this? And we had man hadha, when you're asking about human beings, who is this? Now we have ayna, where. Ayna, where. Okay, this is also a word that's used to ask a question. The next word in the left-hand column, gurfatun, gurfatun, which means a room. The following word, al-hammamu, with ha and shadda on the meem, and the fatta elongated by aleph. Al-hammamu. A short vowel followed by a letter with shadda, followed by a long vowel, followed by a short vowel. Al-hammamu, the bathroom, the bathroom. Note the difference between the two words, al-hammamu, which means the bathroom in general, and al-mirhadu, which means specifically the toilet. Okay, the next word we have is al-matbakhu. Al-matbakhu, yani with ta and kha. Ta, as in ta'am. Al-matbakhu. Yani al-matbakh is the place where ta'am is prepared. Ta'am means food. And the matbakh means the place where you prepare the food, the kitchen. Al-matbakhu. And the final word is another preposition that we had in the first part of this lesson. The preposition fi, which means in. And actually, this preposition fi has many meanings. As you advance in your studies, you'll see some of its meanings. If you look it up in the dictionary, you'll see that it has a number of meanings. The primary meaning that we'll be seeing here is the meaning in, yani as in al-waladu fil bayti, the boy is in the house or in the masjid. Okay, this is the vocabulary word. I mean, there's only what, 9 vocabulary words here. So hopefully, yani we may have already memorized them during the week for homework, since that was part of our homework assignment, to go over the English key and to begin memorizing the vocabulary. Okay, after this, after the English key and the vocabulary, the following page, page 10, is actually, it says lesson 4A. What follows in the English key on page 10 is actually further grammatical notes, which are related to the second half of this lesson. So the lesson 4 is going to be divided into 2 parts. Today we're going to take the first part, and inshallah, bi'ithnillahi ta'ala, next week we're going to take the second part. The second part has its own independent English key that's on page 10, followed by vocabulary on page 11. Okay, so we'll see in the second half of this lesson two more prepositions and two more pronouns and one or two other points. All right, so we're not going to look at that now because that's the English key for the second half of the lesson. We'll be looking at that next week. Okay, so this is now after this, after finishing looking at the English key and the vocabulary, we're going to go to the Arabic section of the book on page 21, lesson 4, and we're going to read the text there on the first page of this first half of the lesson, and then we're going to hopefully try to go through the exercises that follow. Exercises that begin on page 21 and continue on page 22 and page 23. First half of lesson 4. Alright, so let's look at the Arabic text on page 21. It says at the top of the page, it has the number arba'a, the number 4, and it says, ad-darsu ar-rabi'u. Ad-darsu ar-rabi'u. The meaning of this is the fourth lesson. Remember these numbers at the top, at the beginning of each lesson? يعني الأول, الثاني, الثالث, الرابع. These are the ordinal numbers which show the order of things. The first, second, third, and fourth. This is also part of the lesson, memorizing these ordinal numbers. الدرسو الرابع. It's from أربعة, and it is the ordinal number for four, or the fourth. الدرسو الرابع, the fourth lesson. Okay, the Arabic text at the beginning of this lesson number 4 for the first half is in two parts, Aleph and Ba. We're going to read both parts, and we're going to try to comprehend and retain in our memory what we are reading as well. Okay, the grammatical points as well as the information that came in the Ba, second part of the Arabic text on page 21. We're going to try to retain the information, the grammar, as well as the information that it contains. Okay, under Aleph, it has, reading from right to left, Al-Baytu. Al-Baytu, with a Dhamma vowel at the end, indicating that its case is the nominative case, which is called in Arabic, what? The nominative case is called in Arabic, Marfu'un. Al-Baytu. Following it immediately, we see that a preposition has been added, and it became Fi Al-Bayti. Fil Bayti. Fil Bayti. Okay, I'm going to stop here. I failed to mention from the English key. Please make note, on the English key, I just realized it when I was reading this, Fil Bayti. In the English key, on page 7, on the bottom of the page, it says, note number 1, footnote at the bottom of the page, the word fi has a long I vowel, E. But when it is followed by Aleph Lam, the I is shortened, because in Arabic, long vowels are not followed by a consonant which has no vowel. In other words, if a long vowel is followed by a consonant that is sakin, it has sukun, it has no vowel, then that long vowel is going to be pronounced short. Okay, so here we see in fil bayti, we have fi, that's a long vowel, followed by lam, which has sukun. So when a long vowel is followed by a letter with sukun, then the long vowel is going to be pronounced short. So we're not going to say fil bayti. We're not going to elongate fil bayti, but we're going to make it short, fil bayti, as though it's just a fa with kasra, fil bayti. All right, so this rule is mentioned in the English key on page 7, at the bottom of the page, footnote. Okay, so I failed to read that when I was going over the English key. It slipped my mind. But in any case, alhamdulillah, I was reminded of it here. Okay, let's go back again to page 21, Ad-Darsu Rabia. The first half of the Arabic text is explaining to us the functioning and the operation of the preposition fi and the preposition ala. Two prepositions that we have in the first half of this lesson. We're going to have two more in the second half of the lesson. Okay, so we have al-baytu, ending with dhamma, indicating to us that it's in the nominative case, marfu'un. And after the preposition, the object of a preposition changes from nominative to genitive, in Arabic called majrurun. So al-baytu became fil-bayti with kasra. Going across, we have al-masjidu, and after the preposition fi, the harf jar fi, we have fil masjidi. Okay, we're pronouncing it as a short vowel because it's followed by yani a letter with sukun. Fil masjidi. Going down, we have al-maktabu, yani al-maktabu, the desk or the table. And after the preposition ala, which means on or upon or above, ala al-maktabi. Again, the long vowel in ala is going to be shortened because of it being followed by a letter with sukun, lam with sukun. Ala al-maktabi, upon the table, on the table. Going across, as-sariru, the bed. And when it's following the preposition ala, it became ala sariri, on or upon the bed. Here, let me make another note, and that is in lesson 3, we had the rule related to words that begin with sun letters. Okay, as-sarir, the word sarir begins with seen, and seen is a sun letter. So there are two rules that we have to pay attention to here. The first rule is that ala, even though it ends with a long vowel, because it's followed by a letter with sukun, we're going to make it short. The second rule is that the word sarir begins with seen, and that's a sun letter. So words that begin, the first letter of the word is a sun letter. If you attach alif lam to it, then you're not going to pronounce the L sound of the lam. Rather, the lam is merged into the first letter of the word, which is a sun letter. In this case, it's seen. And instead of pronouncing the lam, we're going to double the seen with shadda. So instead of saying al-sarir, we're going to say as-sarir. Instead of saying ala-sarir, long, we're going to make it short, ala-sariri. Al-sariri. So we have two rules here. We have the long vowel in ala being shortened because it's followed by sukun. And we have the lam of the definite article because it's being attached to a word that begins with a sun letter. Then the lam is not going to be pronounced. And the first letter of that word, the sun letter, is going to be doubled with shadda instead of the lam. Al-sariri. Okay, please remember this rule. Somebody asked a question last week about words that have letters like noon in Amina, which should this, since noon is a sun letter, should it take shadda? And I explained in the note that I posted on the page here in reference to that question that the rule of sun letters is in reference to two things. Number one, a word that begins with a sun letter. If we see a sun letter anywhere else in the word other than in the beginning of the word, it doesn't matter. It's normal, it's regular. But if the word begins with a sun letter, that's one. And secondly, we attach alif lam to that word to make it definite. That's when the rule of sun letters applies, that the lam is not pronounced and the sun letter is going to be doubled. The sun letter is only going to be doubled. From this rule, it's only going to be doubled if the sun letter is the first letter of the word and alif lam is attached to that word. Otherwise, when we see sun letters anywhere else, yani just read them the way they are. Okay, so this is the rule that we took in the lesson last week, lesson number 3, words that begin with sun letters, if we attach alif lam, the sun letter is doubled with shadda. Only if it's the first letter of the word and alif lam is attached to that word. Okay, let's go to part B, ba, of the Arabic text for lesson 4 on page 21. We have a series of 5 questions and across from them 5 answers. These 5 questions and their 5 answers are going to be the basis of the exercise number 1 that follows it. Exercise number 1 has 11 questions. 11 questions. We only have 5 statements here, but we have 11 questions based upon it. That means some of these statements, there's going to be more than one question related to them. Rather, every one of these yani lines, these 5 question and answers, every one of them are going to have 2 questions related to them. And one of them is going to have 3 questions because we have 11 questions following this text. Okay, so what I'm saying here is that as we read through this text, I want you to keep in mind that each one of these question and answers Each one of these five question and answers is going to have two questions related to them, and one of them is going to have three. So the questions that follow in exercise number one, if you did it for homework, then you would have realized some of the answers to these questions are obvious, and some of them you have to think about, okay? Because some of them, some of the question and answers have two questions related to them in the exercise number one, and you have to think about it to figure out what the answer might be. Okay, it may require going back and reading the text again, reading these five question and answers again, but the answers, once you read it carefully and you think about it, inshallah, you should have been able to find all of the answers. Okay, let's look at the first question and answer. Page 21, part B. Aina Muhammadun? Aina Muhammadun? Meaning, and you should answer, where is Muhammad? The answer right across from it, going from right to left, huwa fil ghurfati. Huwa fil ghurfati. He is in the room. Please read with me and translate with me. Okay, first question, where is Muhammad? He is in the room. So this is the first piece of information that we're going to have questions about it, and you need to know where Muhammad is. He's in the ghurfa. Second question and answer, wa aina yasirun? Meaning, and where is Yasir? That's a man's name, a masculine proper noun with tanween, right? Aina Yasirun? And where is Yasir? Answer, huwa fil hammami. Huwa fil hammami. Notice that al-hammam has kasra here because it's following the preposition fi. Where is Yasir? He is in the bathroom. This is the second piece of information. Yasir, where is he? He is in the bathroom. Muhammad is in the ghurfa, the room. Yasir is in the hammam. Third question and answer. Wa aina aminatu? Wa aina aminatu? And where is Amina? Hiya fil matbakhi. She is in the kitchen. Notice that we used huwa to refer to Muhammad and Yasir, and now we're using hiya to refer to Amina. Where's Amina? In the kitchen. Where's Yasir? In the hammam. Where's Muhammad? In the ghurfa. Question and answer number four. Aina al-kitabu? Meaning, where is the book? Answer, huwa ala al-maktabi. It is on the table or the desk. Again here, we have the pronoun huwa being used, but not in reference to Muhammad or Yasir, in reference to an inanimate thing, a book. And remember we said huwa can refer to people, animals, or inanimate things. Where's the book? Huwa ala al-maktabi. Wa aina, last, fifth question and answer. Wa aina sa'atu? Wa aina sa'atu? And where's the watch? Hiya ala sariri. Hiya ala sariri. Again, hiya, we had it referring to a human being, Amina, and now we have referring to a thing that is a sa'a, the watch. Hiya refers to people, animals, or things that are classified as being feminine. Mu'annath. Okay, here's five questions and five answers, and now we have 11 questions in exercise number one that we're going to answer based on this. Okay, first exercise number one, it says tamari. Oh, by the way, underneath that picture in between the question and answers, the picture, I guess, is a picture of a kitchen. Yes, a kitchen. And it says underneath it, al-matbakhu. Al-matbakhu, the kitchen. Okay, underneath that word it says tamarinu, tamarinu. Yani, it's the plural of tamrin, exercises. And note that it has a single dhamma. It's mamnu' min al-sarf. It's from those class of words that don't take tanween. Exercise number one, the instruction says, ajib anil as'ilati al-atiyati. Answer concerning the following questions. Al-as'ila is the plural of what? Su'al. Question. Answer concerning the following questions. First question. Ayn al-kitabu? Where is the book? Okay, if you look back through our text, or if you might remember, Ayn al-kitabu was the fourth question. Huwa ala al-maktabi. It is on the table. Second question. Ayn Muhammadun? Where is Muhammad? The answer, the first question and answer, Ayn Muhammadun? Huwa fil ghurfati. Huwa fil ghurfati. Turning to the next page, 22, at the top of the page, question number 3. Ayna sa'atu? Ayna sa'atu? That was the last question. The answer? Hiya ala sariri. Hiya ala sariri. It is on the bed. It. Question number 4. Ayna yasiru? Where is yasir? That was the second question. Ayna yasiru? Huwa fil hammam. I hope that you're getting most of these answers correct, because you had this for homework, and hopefully you took your time and read through the Arabic text and were able to find all the answers. Question number 5. Aina aminatu? Where is Amina? Remember, that question was the third question in the Arabic text. Hiya fil matbakhi. Hiya fil matbakhi. These answers are obvious from the questions that came in the Arabic text. Some of the questions are not going to be so obvious. Question number 6. Aminatu fil gurfati? Okay, now we see another question about Amina, phrased a little bit different. The first question was, where's Amina? Hiya fil matbakh. She is in the kitchen. Now they ask the question, Aminatu fil gurfati? Is Amina in the room? The answer should be, no. She is not in the room. She is in the kitchen. So the answer should have been, La. A'aminatu fil gurfati? La. Where is she? Hiya fil matbakhi. Hiya fil matbakhi. Okay, so we see here that there are two questions related to Amina. The first one was obvious. Where is Amina? The second one, you had to think about a minute, okay? If you know that she was in the kitchen and they said, well, is she in the room? You have to say, no. She is in the kitchen. Question number 7. Ayasirun fil matbakhi? Now, we already had a question about Yasir, question number four, right? It said, Aina Yasirun? Huwa fil hammam. So if another question came about Yasir, Ayasirun fil matbakhi, then how should we answer? La. Where is he? Huwa fil hammami. Okay, question number 8. Man fil gurfati. Man fil gurfati. Oh, we got to go back and try to remember. Who did they say was in the room? That was the first question that came in the Arabic text. Aina Muhammadun? Huwa fil gurfati. So this question, man fil gurfati, the answer should be Muhammadun fil gurfati. Muhammadun fil gurfati. Muhammad is in the room. Question number 9. Waman fil hammami. Waman fil hammami. Okay, again, this question came to us previously, and that is Aina Yasirun. That question came, where's Yasir? And we said that Yasir is in the hammam. So now, this question came, man fil hammam, we have to go back and look at who they say was in the hammam, yasirun fil hammami. Question number 10, ماذا على المكتبي? ماذا على المكتبي? We already had a question about this before, right? Remember, we had said previously, in the Arabic text, أين الساعة? Where's the watch? And we said that the watch is on the table. So when they said here, ماذا على المكتبي? What is on the table? الكتاب على المكتبي. أين الكتاب هو على المكتبي. أين ماذا على المكتبي? الكتاب على المكتبي. And the last question, ماذا على السريري? ماذا على السريري? We had in the Arabic text on page 21, وَأَيْنَ السَّاعَةُ هِيَ عَلَى السَّرِيرِ. So, مَاذَا عَلَى السَّرِيرِ? What is on the bed? السَّاعَةُ عَلَى السَّرِيرِ. The watch is on the bed. Here, let me just note that in questions number 10 and 11, we have another ism istifham. مَاذَا. مَاذَا. Okay, which means what? مَاذَا عَلَى Maktabi, what is on the table? Mada ala sariri, what is on the bed? So please make a note that this is another ism istifham. Mada. Alright, let's go to the second exercise on page 22. This exercise is a familiar instruction. It says, Ikra waqtub. Read and write. Ma'a, along with ضبطي, making exact or precise, أواخري, the endings, الكلماتي, of the words. Read and write, making exact or precise the endings of the word. This exercise is designed to make us pay attention to the fact that originally nouns in Arabic end with dhamma. The original state or condition is that they are in the nominative case, marfu'un with dhamma. But in this lesson we learn that that can change. If a noun is following a preposition like fi or ala, or as we'll see in the next part of the lesson, other prepositions, min wa ila, when a noun is following a preposition, it changes from being the nominative case, marfu'un with dhamma, to the genitive case, majrurun with kasra. So this exercise is designed to make us pay attention to the changing of the vowel, originally taking dhamma. So every word should be read with dhamma unless there's something preceding it making a change. Okay, so when you read this exercise and when you write it, you have to put in the endings of the words, making precise or exact the ending of the word, meaning which vowel goes there. And sometimes we'll have to know, is it a single vowel or a double vowel? In this exercise, we just need to know, is it a dhamma or a kasra? Okay, so the first word should be read as, please read ahead of me, the first word should have been read as al-madrasa tu, with dhamma. That's the original ending of nouns, unless there's something changing it. Second word should be read as fil madrasati, fil madrasati, in the school. The third one, fil bayti, in the house. The next one, al baytu, the house, marfu'un with dhamma. The next word, al ghurfatu, the room, marfu'un with dhamma. The next word, al-hammamu, al-hammamu, with ha, and with shadda on the meem, fatha being elongated by alif. Hammamu, with dhamma, marfu'un with dhamma. The next one, fil-matbakhi, fil-matbakhi, not fi-al-matbakhi, fil-matbakhi, in the kitchen, majrurun with kasra. Next word, al-maktabu, al-maktabu, the desk, marfu'un with dhamma. Its case is that it's marfu'un, nominative case, indicated by dhamma. Next word, al-maktabi, on or upon the desk or table. Yani, al-maktabi here is majrur because of it being the object of the preposition ala. Next word, ala al-kursi, yani with shadda on the ya, ala al-kursi, yani on the chair. Here, al-kursi is majrur with kasra because of it being the object of the preposition ala. The next word, as-sariru, yani with shadda on the seen, the sun letter, as-sariru, meaning the bed. It's marfu'un, indicated by dhamma. Next one, ala al-kitabi, on the book. Yani you put something on top of the book. Here, al-kitab is the object of preposition ala, and therefore the object of a preposition is always going to be in the genitive case, majrurun with kasra. The sign that it's majrur is kasra. And the last one, fil masjidi, fil masjidi, in the masjid. Again here, al-masjidi is the object of the preposition fi, and the object of a preposition is always going to be in the genitive case, majrur, and the primary sign of a word being majrur is kasra. Okay, so this exercise, primarily exercise number 2 on page 22, was designed for us to practice our reading and also to practice our writing, but mainly to know when a word retains its original ending with dhamma and when it changes as the object of a preposition to kasra. Yani when it changes from being in the nominative case to the genitive case, or from being marfu'un to majrurun. And these are words that we must learn. Okay, the next exercise is not numbered. I'm going to number it, number 3, since the previous exercise was number 2. Okay, on the bottom of page 22, it says, Iqra waktub. Iqra waktub. Read and write. Okay, this is an exercise that you have to read and you have to write. And you also have to, not just read and write, but you also have to, yani, translate, right? You have to translate. Okay, but the main thing that I want you to do here is I want you to practice the rules that we had. Words that begin with sun letters, if they have aleph lam, make sure you don't pronounce the lam, but you double the first letter, the sun letter. Secondly, I want you to pay attention to words that follow a preposition, the object of a preposition, its vowel is going to be kasra. Third thing I want you to pay attention to are pronouns. Pronouns. When they use masculine pronouns, look to see what it refers back to and make sure that it's something masculine. A human being, an animal, an object, that's masculine. If they use huwa, if they use hiya, then we should look back and see and make sure that it's referring back to something that is feminine, a feminine pronoun, either human, animal, or inanimate. So I want you to pay attention to the prepositions in this exercise, and I also want you to pay attention to the pronouns. And I also want you to pay attention to the words that begin with sun letters and moon letters and applying that particular rule. And then also I want to make sure that we're translating these things. Okay, so we have to translate everything accurately. We have to read it correctly, and we have to translate it correctly, and we have to pay attention to the grammatical rules. Okay, let's read exercise number 3. It's not numbered, but it's the third exercise. Read and write sentence number 1. Okay, there are 10 sentences here. We're going to read them. Hopefully you have been practicing reading them. I'm going to read the words slowly so you can read ahead of me, and then I'm going to take a pause for a minute for you to translate. Sentence number 1. Read. At-talibu fil jami'ati. At-talibu fil jami'ati. Meaning, the talib, the student, is in the jami'a, in the university. Notice that al-jami'ati has kasra. It's the object of the preposition fi, so it's majroor, yani in the genitive case. Second sentence. Ar-rajulu fil masjidi. Ar-rajulu fil masjidi. Ar-rajul, the man, is in the masjid. Again, al-masjidi is the object of the preposition fi, so it's majroor with kasra. Number 3. A question and answer. Aynat تَاجِرُ أَيْنَ التَّاجِرُ. يعني تاز a sun letter, so it has to be doubled with شَدَّ. أَيْنَ التَّاجِرُ. Meaning, where is the تاجر? Where is the merchant? Answer, هُوَ فِي الدُّكَّانِ. هُوَ فِي الدُّكَّانِ. هُوَ is referring back to تاجر. تاجر is masculine, so we're using the masculine pronoun هُوَ. He is in ad-dukkan. Ad-dukkan, the first letter, dal, is a sun letter, so it has to be doubled with shadda. Ad-dukkan. Also note that the letter following dal is a kaf, and in this word it has a shadda that's followed by fatha, elongated by aleph. Ad-dukkan. Where is the merchant? He is in the shop. Number 4. Al-qalamu ala al-maktabi. Meaning, the pen is on al-maktab, the desk or the table. Al-maktabi is the object of the preposition ala, so it's majrur with kasra. Number 5. Ayna Zainabu. Where is Zainab? This is a feminine proper noun. Feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. Ayna Zainabu. Hiya fil ghurfati. Hiya fil ghurfati. Where is Zainab? She is in the room. Again, al-ghurfati is the object of the preposition fi, so it's majrur with kasra. Number 6. Ayna al-waraqu? Ayna al-waraqu? We had this word previously. Al-waraq means the paper. Where is the paper? Huwa ala al-maktabi. Huwa is the masculine pronoun. That's referring back to al-waraq. Remember we said everything is either masculine or feminine? Paper. How do we know it's masculine or feminine? That's how the Arabs have classified it. We don't see any sign that indicates masculine or feminine, but we just have to memorize. Generally speaking, if you don't see ta marbuta on a word, yani more than likely it's going to be masculine. But sometimes it might not be so, because we have some words that are feminine and they don't have ta marbuta, so we have to pay attention. Aina al-waraqu. Where's the paper? Huwa ala al-maktabi. It, huh? Because we're referring back to paper. It is on the table. Okay, let's go to the next page, 23, continuing with this exercise number 3, sentence number 7. Sentence number 7. Aina al-mudarrisu, with shadda on the ra. Aina al-mudarrisu. Where is the mudarris? Where is the teacher? Huwa is the pronoun, right? It's the masculine pronoun. It's referring back to al-mudarris. Mudarris is masculine, so we use the masculine pronoun. Huwa fil fasli. Huwa fil fasli. He is in the fasl, the classroom. Again, al-fasli is majrur with kasra because it's the object of the preposition fi. Number 8. Aina yasirun. Aina yasirun. Where is Yasir? That's a masculine proper noun. Yasir. Remember, masculine proper nouns take tanween, but it doesn't mean that they're indefinite. All proper nouns, masculine and feminine, all proper nouns are definite. Aina Yasirun? Where's Yasir? We don't say, where's a Yasir? We say it, where is Yasir? Huwa fil mirhadi. Huwa fil mirhadi. He is in the bathroom. Number 9. Ash-shamsu wal-qamaru fi as-samaa'i. Ash-shamsu wal-qamaru fi as-samaa'i. The sun and the moon are in the sky. Note here, ash-shamsu begins with the sun, that is sheen. So the sheen is double, the lam is not pronounced. Al-qamaru begins with qaf. Qaf is a moon letter, so the lam is pronounced. Ash-shamsu wal-qamaru fis-samai. As-samai, seen, it begins with seen. Seen is a sun letter, so the seen is doubled, and the lam is not pronounced. And the fi is shortened because it's followed by sukun. Not fi as-samai, fis-samai. The moon, the sun and the moon are in the sky. Number 10, men fil fasli. Men fil fasli. Yani this is just meant to be read as a question. But anyway, if anybody knows, who is in the classroom? Who did we say previously is in the classroom? Anybody remember? Remember we said in number 7, ayn al mudarris? Where is the teacher? Huwa fil fasli. So men, who is in the fasl? Al mudarrisu fil fasli. Yani that didn't require an answer. I'm just making you think a little bit. Okay, that was the end of exercise number 3. And this is followed by a chart, which is followed by an exercise, which would be the 4th exercise, though it's not numbered. And that chart is a very important chart. It's to help us to recognize and to realize that the difference between masculine proper nouns and feminine proper nouns. Remember, we said that masculine proper nouns take tanween, and feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. Masculine proper nouns take tanween. It doesn't mean that they are indefinite, because all proper nouns are definite, but they take tanween, and feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. Okay, both of them are definite, but the masculine proper noun has tanween, and we want to distinguish between them. So if we look at the right-hand column, All of these are masculine proper nouns. So they come under al-mudhakkar, yani that which is masculine. And then on the left side, all of those are feminine proper nouns. They come under the classification of al-mu'annathu. Al-mu'annathu means that which is feminine. Okay, these are names of men, these are names of women. Note the difference in the endings of the words. Let's read them together. You read first and then I'll follow you. The first word in the right column, masculine proper nouns. The first word, Muhammadun. The second word, Khalidun. with tanween. The third word, hamidun, with tanween. The fourth word, yasirun. Fifth word, ammarun, with shadd on the meem, with the fatha elongated by alif. Ammarun. Sixth word, sa'idun, with tanween. Seventh word, aliyun, with shadd on the ya and tanween. The last word, abbasun, yani with shadd on the ba, fatta elongated by alif and tanween. Abbasun. Notice that all the masculine proper nouns have tanween. Let's read the left hand column from the top. Aminatu, with a single vowel. Next word, Zainabu, with a single vowel. Notice that Zainabu is a feminine proper noun. It doesn't have Tarmabuta, but it's still a feminine proper noun, so it doesn't take tanween. The next word, Fatimatu. Fatimatu. The next word, Maryamu. Maryamu. Again, Maryamu is a feminine proper noun. It doesn't have Tarmabuta, but since it is a feminine proper noun, it doesn't take tanween. The next word, Aishatu. Aishatu. With Ayn followed by Hamza. The next word, Khadijatu. Khadijatu. The next word, Safiyatu. Safiyatu. Notice that this word, Safiya, begins with the letter Saad. Sa. And the ya following the fa is doubled with shadda. Safiyatu. And the last word, Ruqayyatu. Again, the ya following the qaf is doubled with shadda. Ruqayyatu. Okay, so the point is what? Masculine proper nouns take tanween. Feminine proper nouns do not take tanween. So the exercise that follows is related to this particular issue. That is, the issue of distinguishing between masculine proper nouns and feminine proper nouns. So the instruction says what? اقرأ واكتب مع ضبط أواخر الكلمات. اقرأ واكتب مع ضبط أواخر الكلمات. Read and write along with making exact or precise the endings of the words. Okay, making exact or precise may mean, is it Dhamma, Kasra, or Fatta? Or it may mean, is it a single vowel or double vowel? In this case, we are concerned about what? Is it a single vowel or double vowel? We don't have any prepositions or anything changing the vowel from Dhamma to Kasra, from Marfu'un to Majrurun. So we're just concerned about what? The single vowel or the double vowel tanween. Masculine proper nouns, the names of men should have a double vowel. Okay, let's read them. Inshallah, you should have read them for homework. You should have written them out with making exact and precise the endings, meaning with a double vowel dhamma or a single vowel dhamma. Okay, the first word should have been read as hamidun with tanween, because it's a masculine proper noun. Next word, zainabu. Yani, it's a feminine proper noun, single vowel. Aminatu, feminine proper noun, single vowel. Ammarun, with double dhamma at the end, masculine proper noun. Sa'idun, double dhamma, tanween, masculine proper noun. Fatimatu, feminine proper noun, single dhamma. Maryamu, feminine proper noun, single dhamma. Aliyun, with shadda on the ya and double dhamma. Aliyun, masculine proper noun. Next word, Khalidun, masculine proper noun, double dhamma, tanween. The bottom line, first word from the right, Abbasun. Abbasun, with double dhamma, masculine proper noun, and this word Abbas, the ba has the shadda with fatta elongated by alif. Abbasun. Next word, Aishatu. Feminine proper noun, single dhamma. Muhammadun. Muhammadun. Masculine proper noun, double dhamma. By the way, the meme has shadda and its vowel is fatha. In English, many people say Muhammad. Muhammad with kasra. That's incorrect. It's not Muhammad, it's Muhammad. Muhammadun. Yani masculine proper noun, double dhamma. Next word. Safiyyatu. Safiyyatu. Feminine proper noun, single, dhamma. And finally, Khadijatu. Khadijatu. Yani feminine proper noun, single vowel. Okay, this is the end of the first part of the lesson, and hopefully everybody has done well in completing these exercises on your own for homework. And if you made any errors or mistakes, inshallah, this was the time to correct them. Okay, next week, inshallah, bi'idhnillahi ta'ala, we're going to be going to the second part of this lesson, number 4. And for homework, inshallah, you should read the English key. You can start with that tonight. Inshallah, bi'idhnillahi ta'ala, if you have time. And of course, I know that everybody is busy these days. Not only are we fasting and reading Quran more than usual, and we're also praying in the night, either in the masjid, if you're able to, or at home, alone, but we should still be praying. Even if we're praying at home, we should make sure that we perform this prayer. The best time to perform this prayer is in the last half of the night. You know that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that Allah descends to the sama' dunya in the last third of the night. And he asked, yani, who will ask me for something so that I may give him? Who will call upon me so that I may answer him? And who will ask for forgiveness from me so that I may forgive him? This last third of the night is a very important time every day of the year, not just in Ramadan, not just in the last 10 nights, but especially in Ramadan, especially in the last 10 nights. And it's a time that is preferable for prayer if we're able to pray in that time rather than in the earlier part of the night. If a person knows that they will not wake up, then it's better to pray after Isha. But if a person feels that they can get up in the night, in the last part of the night, then it's better to pray in that part of the night. Whatever you can, whether you just pray 4 rak'ah, 6 rak'ah, 8 rak'ah, whatever you're able to pray, you should pray something. This is a very, very important time. Last 10 nights of Ramadan, and specifically yani tonight being yani from the odd nights. So let us please take advantage of this time and not let it get away from us. Okay, I said that because of what? Because I want you to do some homework tonight. But I don't want you to yani, do the homework at the expense of getting up in the night and praying and reading Quran and making dhikr and dua and so on. Yani, the worship is of the utmost importance, but at the same time, learning is also important. Okay, second part of this lesson, number 4, yani, in the English key on page 10, and what follows it, the vocabulary on page 11, we'll see that we have 2 more prepositions, and we have 2 more pronouns, and we also have something related to past tense verbs, the verb ذهَبَ and the verb خَرَجَ, and also when the verb is followed by a clear noun as the فاعل. We're going to talk about that next week. And the vocabulary words are 8 vocabulary words, 2 prepositions, 2 pronouns, and it's not a lot of work, inshallah, for homework. Please read the English key, memorize the vocabulary on page 11, and then go to the Arabic text part B, yani ba, on page 24, and the exercises that follow on page 25 and 26. Page 25 and 26. Okay, so for homework, inshallah, you're going to read the English key, you're going to start memorizing the vocabulary, you're going to read the Arabic text on page 24, as many times as possible, and write it out at least once. Yani, read it and write it. But reading it, try to read it as many times as possible, trying to identify the new vocabulary words, the new prepositions, the new pronouns for the second half of the lesson. 2 new pronouns, 2 new prepositions. And yani, reading, to improve your reading pronunciation, and reading comprehension, to improve your comprehension of what you're reading and translation of this Arabic text on page 24. After that, it's going to be followed by questions. Exercise number 1 on page 25. That's also part of the homework that you should do. Exercise number 1, which is basically comprehension questions from the text on page 24, except that the first 2 questions of exercise number 1 are not from the text. Okay, so the first 2 questions من أين أنت, you can answer that where are you from with wherever you are from. The second question, أنت من الفلبين, you can answer that يعني according to whether you are or not, yes or no. The rest of the questions, من من الصين ومن أين حامد وأين ذهب عباس وأذهب علي إلى المدير. The questions 3 to 6 of exercise number 1 are all based upon the Arabic text on page 24. So you have to make sure when you read that text, you look for the answers for these questions. Exercise number 2 is reading and writing, but making sure that you pay attention to the endings of the words. This exercise is designed to make us distinguish between words that are originally taking Dhamma and words that are now changed from Dhamma to Kasra if they're following a preposition. Exercise number 3, still on page 25, is a reading and writing exercise, and it contains some new yani question words and new the verbs that we're going to take in this particular lesson. It's a reading and writing lesson. You read it, you write it, and you translate it. Okay, there's 7 sentences for that exercise number 3, followed on page 26 with exercise number 4, where you have to fill in the blank with a preposition. Okay, the instruction says ضَع, that means put, فِي الْفَرَاغِ, in the blank or the empty space, فِي مَا يَلِي, and what follows? Harfa jarrin. Harfa jar means a particle of jar, means a preposition. Harfa jar munasaban. Put an appropriate preposition in the blank space. Okay, so they give you a sentence, a jumla ismiya or a jumla fi'liya. Some of them are jumla ismiya, some of them are jumla fi'liya. If you see it beginning with a noun, you know that's a jumla ismiya. It's going to have yani a subject and a predicate, a mubtada and a khabar. But what's missing is the preposition. So you have to fill in the preposition that makes sense there. After that are the new words. Please yani go over the vocabulary carefully, memorize as much as you can, followed by a box which just tells us that these words fi, ala, min, and ila, two of them we took in this first part of the lesson, two we're going to take in the next part of the lesson. These are min hurufi al-jarri. They are min, from among the particles of jar, from amongst the prepositions, meaning that there are other prepositions, many other ones, these are from amongst them. Okay, so this will be the end of the second part of lesson 4, ending that lesson. English key, Arabic text, exercises on page 25 and 26, exercise number 1, which is comprehension, except the first two questions, exercise number 2 and 3, and then on the next page, exercise number 4, vocabulary words, and the box at the bottom. This is going to be your homework for the next week. I'll try to organize it into a daily schedule of assignments. But in any case, I mean, you can make your own schedule, whatever is suitable for you. This is just, what I send you is just a suggestion. I need to help you if you need some help in making your homework schedule. Okay, so please get busy, stay on top of this thing. And I usually, you know, try to remind you to make sure that, you know, don't get behind, because you know, when we get down to lesson 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11 and 12 and 20, and if we're not constantly reviewing, we're going to forget a lot of the words that we learn. We're going to forget a lot of the grammatical points that we learn. So I'm urging you, reminding you to please review every week. Please be constantly engaged in review. It's of the utmost importance. Otherwise, you spend time learning something, and if you don't review it, it's likely that some of it, if not much of it, is going to be forgotten. So we're trying to yani retain whatever you have learned, trying to remind you yani to please constantly be engaged in review. Okay, we're going to stop here. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.